This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Barbara and Declan are here once again to solve every conceivable problem you could have. Good afternoon to you both.
Slowly drying off.
Is it still bad out there?
It's biblical out there.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, okay. It's not great.
It's awful.
It's literally bouncing back up off the ground.
Oh, no. And then it goes back up under your... Oh, no.
Yes, no, it's not good.
It gets on all your bits.
And it's freezing cold as well. Do you know what I mean?
And it's cold, which is a combo of wet and cold.
And cold is not good.
Yeah, no. There's nothing fun.
We should write in to somebody and complain about it.
Yes. Anyway, here's the first question. Now, this is an edited version of the question that was sent in. Barbara and Declan have read the full-length version, but we'd be here until next week if I read out the whole thing. I left a long, controlling marriage. When we separated, my boys were 15 and 17. During that time, they began feeding information back to their dad and undermining me at home. Even stepping in when I was parenting their younger sisters, it escalated to the point where my younger son told me he would not accept me as his mother and began locking me out of parts of my own home at his dad's discretion. Eventually, I made the heartbreaking decision to ask my younger son to stay with his dad, as I couldn't allow that behaviour in front of the girls. Both boys now live with their dad. For the last 2 years, they're 18 and 20. I fear losing further connection within my family and fear the day my girls will say, "Mom, we want to live with dad full time." Life at dad's has less rules, e.g. homework, phones, etc. The legal process is ongoing, but it feels focused on assets rather than helping families heal. Kids are old enough to make their own decisions now. I feel I should have stayed in the marriage, and at least I would have had my kids in the same house as me. I feel rejected, heartbroken, and unsure how to rebuild trust and closeness with my sons as they move into adulthood. How do I repair this? How do I reconnect without pushing them further away? And how do I navigate co-parenting when communication feels impossible? Yeah, there's a lot there.
When I read this first, I just thought, it is heartbreaking, and it is something that's probably a little bit above our pay zone. My overwhelming feeling, having read this letter a couple of times, and, you know, I'm always conscious of the fact that when somebody writes into us, we're getting one side of the
Absolutely.
Situation, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't want to kind of assume things or make any judgments completely based on the information that we've got in front of us. But my overwhelming feeling is that this woman probably does need some professional help to deal with her own feelings, because obviously her marriage has ended. There's grief around that.
Yeah.
And then it's been complicated by the fact that her sons have decided to move in with the father. And I don't want to comment any more on that. I mean, because she did mention that it was at the dad's direction. So all I can say is that, like, I'm really sorry she's going through this, because that must be heartbreaking. But I think that she needs to focus on how she feels about her marriage ending, and then maybe the change in the relationship with her sons. And I think she's probably definitely going to need professional help in order to do that, where she needs to sit down with a therapist and talk about that. I mean, the other thing she mentions is that the legal situation, the legal process is ongoing, but it feels focused on assets rather than helping families heal. Well, I mean, I don't have any personal experience, but I would imagine that's exactly what it's about.
It's not about
helping families heal. And I think that is where she is more focused. So I would think by her starting to go and getting some counselling would be a first step.
Mm.
But it'll be a long process, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a long process. And I think that's the first thing that I would suggest to this person with my complete lack of qualifications to give any advice on something as kind of complex and as serious as this. But it is, it's about playing the long game. I think in the end of the day, you know, the legal thing might be ongoing, but life is ongoing and life is always, you know, throwing up something that, you know, an obstacle or a challenge that needs to be dealt with so you can just move on to the next bit or whatever. And in this instance, I think, I wonder whether this woman is looking at her ended marriage as a kind of a full stop and then expecting that everything related to that and all the problems around that will somehow not spill over into the new version of her life. Instead, of course, you know, the relationships still kind of continue in some way. She wants to maintain a relationship with her children. Her relationship with her boys in particular, I think, would have been going through a kind of a change anyway, because, you know, when kids, particularly boys, become 15 or 16, they, you know, they definitely move on to being less involved with their families and, you know, they're doing their own thing. They're going to change again when they're in their 20s and later on. And, you know, so that's what I meant about the long game. In the long game, you can, if you play your cards right, you can maintain the consistency that your kids will recognize is you being, you know, a caring, loving parent who's kind of, you know, there for them in that way. So by always kind of keeping the door open for them in that way, I would say there is hope. However, I would also say that when she's considering what she's thinking, that she has to kind of also, in her own mind, recognize that while she may feel guilt over the way the family unit has been broken up in the way that it has and the consequences that has in the now, that happened for reasons that I think she'd stand by. She'd stand by her reason for not being with the dad anymore. She's probably pleased that particular aspect of the story has happened, that her relationship with that guy, for that whatever way it worked out, regardless of whether you're going to go he said, she said, in the end of the day, that relationship is kind of fractured. The children are obviously going to be her focus in that the kids are the only thing that she's kind of taken out of that relationship with her. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I get what you mean. Yeah. I mean, the other thing is that she did say in the letter, I don't know if this is part of the bit you read out, that she made the decision to ask her younger son to move out and
one
stay with
them.
His dad. Yeah. And then both of them moved out. So
I think that's because it's teenage boy behavior. I don't think that has anything to do with the background to the story. I just think that's, she is, this is what I'm saying, is that there's a lot going on and not all of it is related to marital breakdown. Some of it is related to having teenage boys and they're tapping into who, you're not the boss of me. Dad has different rules. She doesn't have the double authority of both parents kind of coming down on them with the same story. So they're playing the game against her, I think.
Yeah, and they often don't read from the same hymn sheet.
Yeah.
Well, also, you know, teenagers are inclined to go, who's to blame here? And it's a very binary look at the situation rather than things broke down. It strikes me now, I mean, they're still going through the court process. Like there is mediation.
Yeah.
That isn't a binding process. Both parties have to go into it with an open heart and be prepared to engage with that. Often that can be very different. But we've over the years, we've done items on mediation and people have emailed in. And there's often a kind of dichotomy that I suspect might be here, that they go, I love my children, but I hate him. And the thing is, how much do you love your children? If you love your children, you'll suck it up and sit in a room with him
to
figure out how to do this.
Yeah.
No matter how much you hate him.
But that's, I think, again, coming back to what I said, I think she has to get herself straight in her own head.
Oh, sure.
Before she can negotiate mediation with the husband, the ex-husband, or with getting her sons, you know, back on side and getting them back into a kind of a healthier relationship than where they are now.
But also, as you grieve for a relationship or a marriage that has ended, you know, as you look back over your shoulder to what you had back then, she's looking back over her shoulder and looking at a family where the kids were much younger and they were up behaving in kind of more childish type ways. Whereas those boys have grown up now. They're 18 and 20 now. I mean,
they're 18 and 20.
Yeah.
They're not grown up.
Well, no. Maybe they're not. Their brains are still not matured.
Not grown up.
Yeah. But they're still the relationship is evolving. The kind of the parental child relationship is evolving.
But I think she feels guilt I mean, there's probably guilt. Well, I mean, she did refer to her marriage as being a controlling marriage. But I think there's guilt now. What I'm picking up from it, and again, I don't know, is that she is now regretting, feeling guilty over the fact that she initially asked one of the sons to leave.
Well, that'd be a heartbreaking decision. I mean,
I'd say, you know, when there's so much emotional turmoil going on, you know, it's very hard to see clearly and rationally and to make that kind of. And it sounds like she made a decision maybe on the spur of the moment without really thinking about it. And now she's regretting it because it seems like the boys don't have that much communication with her. And that's really sad. But I mean, I definitely think she needs to go and talk to somebody herself about herself and her own feelings first and to build up a bit of inner strength in order to be able to deal with the rest of it, you know. Yeah. And they will deal with it. Like, I mean, you know, the good thing about life is nothing ever stays the same forever. So, you know, things do change.
Actually, somebody's got in contact saying that they're a therapist. Says, I agree that this woman needs the support of a professional to navigate this new and challenging terrain. She mentioned her husband was controlling. Yeah. If this was extreme, then her boys observed and learned from this.
Yeah.
Combine this with the current social media diet fed young men, there is a risk that they are mimicking inappropriate male dominance behaviour. Family therapy might also help, and this doesn't require the father if the kids agree.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree with that, yeah.
And if that is what's happening then her response to being kind of like disciplinarian with her son, keeping her son away from her two daughters, that was a good parenting move in my view. I'm thinking like it's really difficult, really hard. They had an opportunity where they could do that because there was a dad in a different location. I also do think though that in the long term thing is that the evolving relationship, all of the things being consistent, that there is scope for a kind of a reconnection down the line. I do think it is. If she stays consistent, and it isn't anything really dark, like there was a lot of like the behaviours that texter just mentioned.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a really, really, I mean,
difficult, right?
What can you say to
that? On a happier note, lots of people have texted in to say the sun is shining in Galway and Clare.
Of course
apparently,
it is.
Of course
well,
it
I'm
is.
Off to Mayo on Saturday.
They're all delighted with themselves.
Hope it stays that way.
I know Mayo's different. Mayo has its own climate.
Ah, stop. Don't tell me that.
This is going to make me sound shallow and ridiculous, which I probably am. I'm a boob man. I've always liked big boobs since the time I hit puberty. The problem is, I'm now with someone I really, really like, and she's small boobs. She's a great woman. We laugh all the time. We have chemistry. She's kind. She's thoughtful, honest. She's the best relationship I've ever had. But every now and again, this stupid voice in my head goes, but she's no boobs. I feel shallow even thinking it, but being honest, I don't think I'm 100% satisfied or aroused in the bedroom because of it. I would never in a million years say anything to her or make her feel less than. So what do I do? Is this just some teenage fetish I need to grow out of? Do types fade when you actually care about someone? Declan, you're obviously the most qualified person to answer this question.
Off you go.
You know, as the proud owner of many sets of plastic boobs.
Which are your favourites?
I can tell you that. No, that's obviously irrelevant.
Well, here's a question for you. Do you feel you can't be a woman without a set of boobs that are...
No, of course not.
Okay.
No, of course not. You know, whatever. And I don't have that many plastic boobs at all. I was just making a joke that I thought would resonate with the listeners.
Okay, yeah.
You know, creating a
fake
character.
Please text him to talk, tell us about your plastic boobs.
Look, this is one of those ones where people take like what is essentially a kind of a psychological or a kind of a thing that happens in people's heads, and then they try to make it into these kind of, you know, definitive fact-based narratives that their life has to live by. I mean, you know, people have, it's just, I think people get ideas imprinted in their minds as to what sexuality is meant to be, what a woman is meant to be. Some of it is, you know, scientifically correct, but some of it is completely socially created. And some of it is created by what we see in television and what we see in magazines and what we're taught, is, you know, particularly for young men, they're taught that this is an attractive woman and this is not an attractive woman. And the reality of it is that most men don't end up with the kind of woman that they thought was an attractive woman when they were 12 or 15 or 16. So it's a kind of a social script that most men actually veer away from in reality, because you end up meeting a person, not a woman. You end up falling in love with, you know, an actual full bodied person, regardless of the size of their boobs. And I think, you know, yeah, you can say, oh, that's my type. I like this and I like that and whatever. That is kind of shallow. You're basically reducing it down to somebody's body being the thing that turns you on. Yeah, it can. But then you got to ask yourself, though, what would be the difference between a random stranger with the right size set of boobs and the actual, you know, full-blooded woman that you have beside you who makes you laugh? What's the distinction there? Is that other stranger more attractive to you? Like, and you're going to ask yourself that. Yeah, you're going to ask yourself, what's that about? And I think fundamentally, it's all very well and good to say you have a type. It's another thing entirely to say that that type is going to almost sabotage you from making connections with people that you like. That seems to me very immature and short sighted, particularly because women's boobs change as they get older. Anyway.
That's true. Right, okay.
Well, they don't if you have very little.
Yeah, fine. That's true.
They don't. They can't go anywhere.
Point, like, because, like, you know, yeah, if
they can't go anywhere.
Well, I meant his type.
And you can give up wearing a bra, and it's great. When I read this first, I thought, oh, this is like where porn gets us now, that this man just sees a woman as the sum of her parts and he's like, the part he's most into is a woman's boobs. But then I thought, no, because even back in my day, when there was no porn, you know, you had this thing.
Is that the Stone Age, Barbara?
Yeah. Okay. You had this thing of men saying, I remember it, like, oh, are you a boobs man or are you an arse man? Do you remember that? You know, oh, yeah, I'm a boobs man. So, like, this is forever. And it's, you know, I mean, yeah, it's just, it's very annoying. And I mean, when I read it, I thought, like you, I thought, how old is this guy? Like, is he 16?
Yeah.
Like, it's so immature. It's unbelievable. I presume he will grow out of it. But the other thing is, like, you know, I mean, I'd love a fella who is 6'4" with a hairy chest. But like, there you go. You can't always get what you want. He's got a nice woman who ticks all the other boxes. And, you know, he needs to get over himself. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And he could maybe get himself a pair of plastic boobs or whatever, fake boots, and he could fondle those on his own time or something, and that might sort him out. But, I don't know.
I hope that girlfriend figures out who he is and dumps him, says the texter. Somebody else says, tell him to knock her up. I'd no boobs when I met my father. Four children later, can't get my old tops over my boobs.
There you go.
Do not knock her up.
It's how reductive the whole thing is and how, you know, as you say, the sum of the parts and then focusing on just that one aspect of a person seems so, like, it just seems a really ridiculous form of sexuality. It seems so basic.
I totally agree.
Like, I just like boobs.
Yeah, it's like very immature. Yeah.
It's like really, like, you know, infantile.
So grow up.
Yeah, just grow up. Loudon Wainwright III, the singer, when he had little kids, he had one of his kids is called Rufus, and because when Rufus was breastfeeding, he wrote this song called "Rufus is a Tit Man," and then Rufus grew up to be anything but that.
Well, there you go.
Don't be making those predictions about your children. Yeah,
interesting. Oh, things you learn.
A few months ago, I met a man while I was away for a weekend. What I thought would be just a bit of fun turned into three of the most intense, romantic, and connected nights I've ever experienced. It wasn't just physical. We talked for hours, laughed constantly, shared personal stories, and he made me feel seen in a way I haven't felt in years. He held my hand in public, brushed my hair out of my face, kissed me on the forehead, and looked at me like I was the only person in the room. We both knew the situation had an expiry date. We live in different cities and neither of us made big promises to each other. The problem is, I can't seem to let it go. I find myself replaying moments in my head, wondering if it meant as much to him as it did to me. I compare every date since to how he made me feel, and no one measures up. It feels ridiculous to be this affected by something so short-lived, but it stirred something in me that I can't switch off. I don't know if I'm missing him or missing the version of myself that I was when I was with him. Carefree, confident. This is a blurb for a Mills and Boone novel. How do you get over someone who was never really yours to begin with?
I think, I think you do eventually get over someone who was never really yours to begin with. I mean, this sounds, as you say, it's beautifully written, and it sounds like, it sounds like a wonderful interlude in this young woman's life. And it's lovely that she has such nice, warm, fond memories of this magical weekend.
Passion.
Yes. Yes. And we don't know. Well, obviously, they're probably not still in touch. And I'm wondering,
if he went down with the ship.
Yeah, that's probably what happened. Yeah,
that must be it, actually. Yeah, because I'm wondering, like, if they did have this intense kind of connection, this intense weekend together. It's very unusual nowadays for them not to be then continue to be connected in some way.
Yes,
you know?
Indeed. Yeah.
And I don't know if this, they were in, she said they were in different cities. Were they in Ireland or were they abroad? Like, so again, I don't know. But long distance relationships are possible. So to me, it just seems, because of, obviously you're not still in touch, it seems like it was just one of those wonderful weekends.
Yeah.
And most people have had that. Do you know, weekends where you look back and go, that was brilliant. That was amazing.
Yeah.
I had the greatest time. But they're only meant to be that. So what she
needs... That's what makes them brilliant.
That's what makes them brilliant. Yeah. So she needs to refile all those memories in a drawer in her brain that says wonderful interlude, as opposed to the drawer in her brain that says possible relationship. It was never a possible relationship. It was just a wonderful interlude. As for missing him and the version of herself that she was when she was with him, she needs to kind of, you know, do a bit of like, why do I not feel carefree and confident and alive on my own? Because that's really important that you learn how to be that. I mean, because obviously he awaken something in you that's there, that, you know, you can be confident and you can be whatever else, carefree and whatever else. So I don't think she has a choice, but she has to move on and just file it as a wonderful memory.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that she needs to separate the kind of the fantasy of that, the high level intensity that that experience was allowed to have was, as she already pointed out, because they both knew it wasn't just going to last.
Yeah.
Because that allows people to just kind of, you know, they're not having to save things up for, you know, the next
and
level or, you know, hold something
to that
back
as well, isn't
there? And you know, because people aren't, in a, it's kind of a weird thing to say, but neither of them were going to be held accountable for what they're going to, you know, for how much I love you they were giving to somebody in a high intensity for that, you know, one night, three night stand. And the whole thing about it, I agree with you. I don't think there's a future in it at all, except as a wonderful memory that she has in her store bank of things that she did in her life that she has no regrets about because it was kind of beautiful in its own mad romantic way. Kind of like, not like Titanic, but more maybe that kind of other movie where they walk around Paris for the whole, you know, when I... There's a it's before sunset and it's a beautiful movie and it's just all about the intensity of these, you know, two people just meet and they just open and
connect,
it's and the connection is mad. Does it lead to something ever? You know, well, that led to two sequels, but it might not lead to anybody else's kind of, you know, that's more of a money thing, I'd say, than Vegas in reality. But for this woman, I think what she really should focus on is what actual permission she gave herself or was given to her by that person in that space to allow her to behave in a certain way that she misses. Because that's the real bit. Everything else is, you know, many of us have kind of, you know, the fleeting romance that kind of we remember because it was, it kind of was passionate and it was like, whatever, but it's over and it's done. But it is held in our mind as a romantic kind of a beautiful memory.
And it's great because you never fell out or you never broke up. It was
and
just
also
this,
what makes it beautiful because it's just this perfect short
just
story,
this little tiny
or a highlight reel, as opposed to this the ongoing kind of the minutiae and the kind of the mundanity of life where you're actually having to sit with somebody discussing how you're going to pay for bills or do the laundry or all that kind of stuff that changes relationships. You know, and it's easy to think something is amazing if it happens under the sunshine or whatever as well. So there's loads of reasons why that's all a bit of a delusion. But I do think for herself, she needs to go, what was it about that situation that allowed me to behave in a certain way that I miss behaving like that I can't do? Why am I not giving myself that permission? Is it because I believe other people's opinions are going to change about me and all that? That's the bit where she could probably do something to give herself.
I mean, there's always that kind of frisson of energy in a situation like that, that obviously kind of energizes you and makes you feel more about everything. But the confidence and the carefreeness that she describes is still in her. Like, if she felt it, that's there somewhere. Yeah. So she's got to work on that. And not looking to get it from somebody else's approval, but just getting it from within herself and saying, you know, if you attracted this guy and you had a great weekend, well, then you're a great, great young one. So go on out and, you know.
Yeah. He held my hand in public. Is that like not a thing anymore? Is that like some, you know, amazingly?
That's kind of where I was talking about the permission. What is it about her opinion of herself being like, you know, I'm not mad for the public displays of affection
myself. Did they not have sex then?
Oh, God, I hope so.
Barbara!
No, I'm just saying, like, because she says he held my hand in public, brushed his hair, kissed me on the forehead.
She says it wasn't just physical. We talked for hours.
Most intense romantic connection. I hope so, yeah.
No, but she says, like, you know, like, holding her hand in public was like, that's a huge thing. No one does that.
Maybe nobody ever has before. And it's about, it's not about, you know, having like a fling and being in somebody's bedroom. It's about how you are treated in public and how.
Mightn't be from a woman either.
Well, look at you, Barbara, looking for all the kind of, you know, the
maybe that's
the
what
angles.
She's saying. He
smashing those heteronormative stuff.
Yeah,
yes.
Look at me go.
Look at you. Yeah. Go, girl. Yeah. Yay. Yeah,
I didn't spot that one. Yeah,
well, I was about to talk about that, about the public displays of affection
that's
and how,
what I mean,
and how sometimes that's because of how you feel, where your place is in society and whether or not you're kind of, whether your self-worth or your just fear of getting a punch in the head allows to behave in a certain way. But that aside, you know.
Being kissed on the forehead's a bit weird, isn't it? That's not really.
That's like something your dad would do.
That's a bit weird, isn't it?
Where you go in with the wear and you just get a kiss in the forehead. And then you're back.
That's all I'm getting.
Your boobs weren't big enough.
Going back to the boob question, it's a very measured, mature reflection in this. What's your take on women who only like big Mickeys?
I think most women aren't as fascinated by men's Mickeys as men think they are.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Barbara Declan, thank you both very much.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.